Welcome back to Skinwalker Radio. This show is all about Skinwalker Ranch and the crazy stuff that has happened there and the Uintah Basin. My guest today is James Keenan. James has some really good insights as far as what's going on at the ranch and what are some interesting things that he's learned while doing hours and hours of research in the Uintah Basin. He specifically wants to know about the Navajo culture and learn about some of the petroglyphs that he's discovered along the side of rock faces right around the Uintah Basin and within the Indian Reservation itself. Some of these are really interesting and depict certain things like UFOs and subterranean tunnels and skinwalkers and some various other things. He and I exchanged quite a few ideas, and he has a lot to say about the subject, so I hope you guys are ready.
Sounds good.
Okay. So yeah, we're recording now. So thank you for meeting with me, James. You and I have talked on the phone a little bit about some of your experience with the ranch and some other things that are really interesting. So I wanted to get you on the line here and kind of get some of your opinions as far as what you think is happening out at the ranch and what you think isn't happening out at the ranch. So I kind of want to give you just an open forum to tell me in a nutshell your theories, I guess, as far as the weird paranormal stuff that's happening. And then I want to kind of get into the second part, which is the UFO type thing, because I think they're two different things. So I kind of wanted to start at the beginning with the paranormal stuff.
Okay, sure. And again, thanks for having me on. So there's quite a bit going on, as we know, at the ranch. As they've said in many books and documentaries, as I've been up there and started investigating and researching, I went back into the historical data, mostly the Native American data through artifacts, petroglyphs, pictographs, and this stuff has been going on for a very long time. In regards to what I think is going on, or at least the potential for it, the first thing I would have to say is the portals at the ranch and on the Uintah Basin. There seem to be the potential for portals being shown, and different races of humans and possibly different species. Or other, I guess, have been shown to be coming out of portals into that location. Not just the ranch, but we're talking about the entire basin from what would be Dinosaur National Monument, McConkey Ranch, down to the Nine Mile Canyon, which encompasses actually the ranch falls directly in the middle of those three locations. If you triangulate, the Ute Reservation, Fort Duchesne, and the ranch are directly in the middle of that. There's definitely been portal usage. I know you want to get into the UFOs and the UAPs later. That is also shown in the petroglyphs. There seems to be objects cloaked, maybe in some sense, transmitting. And from what they show, it looks to be not quite over the ranch, but maybe over the ridge, a little further north. From what I was able to encompass, I attempted on one of the glyphs to try to match up what looked to be a star chart to me. However, we may just have been in the wrong time of the year, or maybe in the wrong part of the solar system or galaxy, based upon, you know, what was probably over 1,000 years ago to today. There's definitely some weird stuff going on in regards to the paranormal. You can see a lot of things shaking in the ground, even on the outskirts. The road leading up to the ranch a few years ago, the county vacated the public road based upon Adamanium's request and created a private road. And I'm pretty sure they did this just due to the fact that the paranormal activity extends past their gates and their borders. And, you know, when I'm talking about things shaking, I'm talking about telephone poles shaking pretty violently. And if you're using an accelerometer, I know that it's mostly for, you know, mechanical devices, things of that nature to look at, you know, possible things loose and all that. But if you use an accelerometer on the ground too, it's crazy what it picks up in regards to that. From the people that I've interviewed or from past interviews, from those people, those researchers that have been doing this even longer than I, there's definitely what people would consider shape-shifting taking place, whether that is with technology or based upon, you know, something that the Native Americans know that we don't, I'm not exactly sure. I'm more towards it being some sort of technology that was more than likely located by ancient Americans a long time ago. They didn't know, you know, exactly what it was. They're probably still using it. It's probably been passed down between possibly the medicine men or in the chieftain system. And I also believe that currently, I don't know if it's the government, private entity, may also be using that type of technology on the Uinta Basin, and have more than likely been testing it around or in the ranch area. And, you know, when it comes to people saying skinwalkers, it's pretty much the same thing as shapeshifters. They've, you know, the Native Americans call it the Yinalushi. You know, we know it as skinwalkers, but it's a shape-shifting process or ability through technology or other. But yeah, you see a lot of interesting lights in the area too at night, green and orange. I haven't seen any other colors, but I'm not quite sure, you know, what it is up there, but they're green and orange. And then if you talk to those on the Ute Nation, which is just slightly over 3 miles north of the ranch, there's just some really incredible stories coming out of there, you know, from people from just private citizen all the way to security guards in regards to what they've seen.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I wanted to bring you on because I know you're really familiar with the Native American stuff, and I know that there's a lot of things going on out there, and I'm not an expert by any means, but I am somewhat familiar with some of the, call it Navajo creation stories, if you will, where there's essentially multiple planets, basically, and beings are essentially kicked out of previous planets and go to the next, and then eventually more or less end up here. And it kind of sounds like that lines up perfectly with what we're seeing, you know? So we have the archetypal creation story, and then we have people who might be, just call them evil spirits, if you will, getting kicked out of their previous places and then ending up here. It lines up perfectly with what we're actually seeing of portals, and then beings sometimes reportedly stepping out of those portals. Some of those looking like your stereotypical skinwalker, you know, a bipedal type of cryptid, if you will.
Absolutely. The when you talk about that, you know, I guess I would say it's a theory or a personal belief that I'm leaning more towards is the fact that this portal system was based on multiple opportunity, I guess you could say, in the fact that I believe it was a capability was on the 40th degree latitude line. If you look at what we're seeing in the petroglyph system, and then you go into the artifacts on Sardinia, Italy, in Iraq, northern Iran, Armenia, you're seeing the same creatures, giants, And you're also seeing the same people with the same type of helmets, same type of stance and their artifacts that's identical to what's on the Uintah Basin. So I'm pretty convinced that at the 40 degree parallel, these portals were functional. And what's even more amazing is almost to the inch where the giants were in Sardinia is identical right to Skinwalker Ranch. And then you're talking just a few feet away from Mount Olympus in Italy, and in Greece, and you're talking about just a few feet off from that, and you're seeing in the petroglyph system what looked to be minotaurs, and then you have obviously the minotaurs from Crete and southern Greece, and you go to certain locations and you see what looks to be a portal opening in the petroglyphs, what somebody saw, and you see multiple different creatures coming out. And then you go and you match this, or you go to McConkie Ranch and you look at those petroglyphs and there's obviously non-Native Americans in a couple of them. And boy, they sure look like what you're seeing in older Europe or in the Middle East, the same thing. And like you said, there's that possibility that maybe they're also interdimensional, interplanetary. You got to look at the big picture too in regards to what's under or what the Uintah Basin has in it, which is massive amounts of oil and natural gas, and that this was a huge, massive lake at one point. And there's a product, it's from oil that's called gilsonite, and it's only found there. And in order to have mined this, they created these huge crevices and gaps that go on for miles and miles and are 2,000 feet down, and they're just now empty pockets of nothing. So think about, what did we disturb? Or what could we have accidentally activated during all that mining? Because all that mining started just above the ranch, right below Fort Duchesne in the late 1800s, when this started picking up more so in current time and current day. And then, like you said, you look at their system and beliefs of how we are, and you're talking about star people, you're talking about little people. And absolutely, you see it in their glyphs. You hear it when you talk to them. And the things that seem to have been recorded from scientists on the ranch or have been seen, yeah, they go hand in hand, absolutely.
No, awesome, that's a really interesting story. I didn't know that about the 40th parallel, but that makes a lot of sense to me, because if you look at the 40th parallel and some of the places you've described and then compare that to some of the stories, you'll notice that the 40th parallel, like you said, runs right through, you know, the Mediterranean, you know, the, you know, southern Turkey, Iraq, you know, Persia, and some of those kind of places. And if you follow those same stories, that's, you know, the very beginning of all of these, you know, mythologies, if you will, that, you know, they all follow a similar theme of, you know, having the giants, and, you know, the Bible calls them the Nephilim, if you will. And they're not always giants per se in the literal sense, but they're always different. You know, they're not a naturally born human, right? So, and they're always some kind of, if you will, interstellar or religious implications there, you know, and they can go both ways on the theory of the origin, but, you know, it's all starting to kind of line up and paint a pretty cool picture.
Yeah, absolutely. The potential's there, like you just said. And like you said too, I'm kind of amazed that we've gone this far. I mean, we're in the year 2019, and people, you know, in their books, they just seem to mention or briefly go over things like gilsonite or the petroglyphs and pictographs, but nobody's really dived into the recorded history. And I'm really surprised. Instead of, they have just seemed to narrow down really just to one area where it's a lot broader and a lot wider. And I think in order for us to hopefully solve what's going on, and I think multiple things are taking place, I think you have multiple entities and other things in effect at the ranch and around it on the basin. I think we have to widen our view as to what we're looking at in order to hopefully figure it out. And, you know, like in the recent lectures I've been giving, instead of just recording data or recording what's taking place, I think it's time we start experimenting, you know, test the waters a little bit more and see what it does to the events or what's causing those events, maybe disrupted in some way, especially the transmissions that seem to be taking effect above the ridge, you know, which is just above the ranch area.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, they had the NIDS out there for a couple of years, and NIDS was specifically looking for the UFO type stuff. I don't think that they really cared too much about the paranormal type things, and they weren't on the ranch 24/7. So more often than not, when they did get a report of something interesting happen, it would take them, you know, an hour or a couple hours to get out to the ranch. And by that time, pretty much everything's already done and the excitement's over. So they didn't ever report any real findings that were of any interest. But like you said, it's time now to start doing some of those kind of experiments. So what can be done now to get concrete evidence of something? You know, we have the stories and we have eyewitness testimonies, and everybody keeps wanting to know, you know, what's happening, what's real, and why isn't anything being done? And you bring up an awesome point. If you're looking for UFOs or UAPs, for instance, you might use a certain system of tools, right? That might give you telemetry data. You might be looking for radiation patterns, what have you. But that might be completely different than anything that might be paranormal. So what, in your opinion, if you were Robert Bigelow or Hal Putoff and you had unlimited funds, you know, what would you do to gather something that's concrete?
Absolutely. So, you know, they were always saying that even no matter where they placed a camera or something seemed to disconnect it or warp it, turn it off. There were these power drains. And, you know, I'm not sure if they were making this up to keep getting funding or if it was a constant that was happening, but expand where you're placing these cameras and put a lot more, put multiple power, you know, packs to them so that they continue to record. In regards to what I was talking about, experimenting, is I'm talking about, you know, bringing electromagnetic energy along with huge neodymium magnets and massive sound wave frequencies. I've been looking into the cost of what this would take to put this device together and place it. A couple locations that I know of, maybe, obviously it would have to be mobile, and activate all three at one time and see if it disrupts anything or causes something to happen. And I got that from looking from the past data that's been collected as to what is taking place. And why not interrupt or cause something to be upset or change on all of those, on an electromagnetic sense, on a high level magnetic sense, and on a high frequency sense all at one time, and let's see what happens. You know, what does it do? Does it upset something? Does it materialize something? If it's cloaked, who knows? But something alternate than what we're just constantly doing. We're doing the same thing over and over and over, just reinventing the wheel, or pushing the same stories that have been heard now since, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, technology is so much better. Why not use it?
No, absolutely. You're right. I feel like the same conversation has been had since like 1980, and your standard coast to coast type format Someone calls in, reports something suspicious. People say, oh, wow, cool, that's neat. Somebody calls in and discredits it, and the conversation goes in that direction for all eternity until something happens. But like you said, 2019, the technology is so far better than what it was back then and so far more accessible. You know, you don't have to be a multimillionaire anymore necessarily. You're just, you know, kind of a middle-class normal guy yourself, but you have the, you know, technical knowledge and you're able to get some of these cool type testing machines that where you can actually take them out on the ranch. So my question is have you personally been on the ranch itself, and have you witnessed any of the cool phenomenon that has been reported there, or were you mostly just working around like the Fort Duchesne area or surrounding properties?
So the closest I got, I was on the east side gates before security came out, so I didn't get on there. Was able to talk to the one individual that was there for a while. I did come in through a back way to the ridge late at night on the east side, pretty deep into that area, but never down, you know, below the ridge into the ranch area. I personally don't believe the focal point is the ranch. So my investigation and everything is taking place more in Fort Duchesne. I believe the focal point is on the Ute Reservation, and I've gathered a lot of evidence to kind of provide and show to people in regards to what my theory or process is on why I believe that. I believe that there's as much, maybe even more, further north east towards like what's Blind Frog Ranch. The McConkie Ranch is 21 miles away. And obviously they saw exactly what was happening on the ranch, dinosaur national monuments. You know, they have five locations of that are heavy petroglyph sites, anywhere from 30 to 60 miles away, same exact thing showing. And then, you know, Nine Mile Canyon is south of the ranch and the same thing. So I've never really believed to focus directly on just the ranch. I have texted with the owner, the current owner, and I would love to be able to get on there and create what I'm hoping to create in order to, you know, test what we were just talking about. But I can do just as much elsewhere. My objective of trying to get onto the ranch was to look for petroglyphs in certain locations based upon the focal point that I believe resonates from the Ute Nation of Fort Duchesne. And I also wanted to hit the ground with ground penetrating radar at certain locations that I believe would probably bring back a positive hit based upon Google Earth searches and talking to one individual who was you know, just done a voluminous amount of research and work in the Uintah Basin and on Skinwalker Ranch recently as well. And I mean, we're talking, there's a very, very interesting site that is 16 and a half miles away going towards Vernal that is a NASA site and very few people know about. And what was there was just intense and incredible. And it makes you wonder the story that they provided and what they were saying was that location was for. Maybe it wasn't just for that. Maybe it was for something else based upon all this celestial activity, like you said earlier, you know, taking place in that area. What were they monitoring and why did they have to be so close or directly on that same location?
Yeah, it makes you think that they picked up on something too, you know, because if NASA is out there, and granted NASA has done all kinds of experiments and not just focused on, you know, astronomy and things of that nature, you know, they've developed aircraft in the past. that they've used to basically, in conjunction with the CIA, become spy aircraft that they use in the Air Force. So they've got their hands in all kinds of things, including like weather data and things of that nature. So yeah, that's really interesting that NASA has a presence there. I didn't know that. And it does not seem that far from the ranch, and it's definitely within the, you know, Unitah Basin to collect any kind of data. So, you know, you got to kind of wonder if it's really NASA or if that's just the name on it, you know, and if some other entity out there is just using that as a collection point. And you also have to wonder, like, what's under the ground, right? Because the accelerometers on the poles are showing something interesting, you know, earthquake data is showing something interesting. And it's rumored that the person who sold the ranch to the Shermans, I think it was the Meyer family, they gave strict instructions to not dig. And then you have the story of the Shermans using a 70-pound motorized post hole digger that just came up missing and ended up in a tree somewhere, you know, when they took a lunch break. So do you think that there's anything under the ground? And is there anything that you found in the Native American research that would indicate that they think that the ground is for some reason a hotbed for something subterranean?
You know, when you look at the historical data, there's a couple of interesting petroglyphs that could be interpreted as an individual or an entity running through an underground tunnel, and directly above it is what looks to be, gosh, I hate to say this, it really does look to be a UFO that has landed on the petroglyph itself. Do they correlate? I personally believe that there is definitely something below ground. Like I said, I think these gilsonite mining that has taken place, continues to take place, is interesting, the way they mine this. And I think it's done something, activated something, come in contact with something, disturbed something. I believe, you know, based upon my accelerometer readings at certain locations, the anomalous events taking place are difficult to fathom that they're natural. I mean, it's always possible. Very few people have looked into the fault lines that are very close to the west of the ranch. Matter of fact, I couldn't locate anybody ever talking about it until I went and researched it. And the fact that northward on the Uinta Basin, there seems to be, and people are going to say, well, it's a fault. So obviously it's going to, that's where the earthquake is going to resonate. And, you know, it's going to be close to the same on the Richter scale. But for this, for earthquakes to happen there almost on a regular basis, like every 22 years exactly, and it'd be like a 5.1 in the exact same spot, almost at the exact same depth of 5 kilometers, that's interesting. You know, when you look at historical data, it's always very near to it, very close to it, but not that identical. And you know, I'm not sure what to, you know, to think about it in regards to if it has anything to do with the paranormal or the UFO portion of, you know, what's taking place on the ranch and on the basin. But it hasn't been investigated properly. And, you know, even when you come in regards to the government, the geological, you know, portions of the government, they haven't collected a lot of data on the faults that are there. And they don't know a whole lot about them, especially the one to the west of Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, good point. And you mentioned in the first time we spoke that you might have had contact with somebody who could speak a little bit more to that, that might have been involved in some of the past investigations. Did you have a chance to meet with that guy? And is there any information you can share about that?
So this weekend I met with somebody that worked for NIDS in the past and was a geologist. I don't want to say who it was, but that was more for me to ask him if what I data I've collected is possible in regards to what I think is behind. find it. And I'm still not quite ready to, say, hey, this is possible, or this may be the cause of something in that regards. So in regards to that geologist, I'm going to hold off until I can verify data. You know, I may be completely off, and I don't want to bring in anything that, would be a false positive at this point.
No, I understand. I appreciate that. And, I definitely don't want to put you or him on the spot. But you also mentioned one time that we spoke that, according to the hieroglyphs, in your opinion, you think that there might be some technology there that we mentioned earlier that the Indians in that area had, and that it might be extremely old and possibly up to 7 catastrophes prior to now. Can you speak a little bit on that?
Sure. So, minus the past 7 catastrophes, there looks to be something recorded in the petroglyph system showing a device in the sky transmitting outward. And what's interesting is there have been 1 or 2 books written by Native Americans where, and it's just interesting, it could have just been, coincidence, but their cover of their book almost looks identical to this device and what it's doing. And the book itself has to deal with skinwalkers or shapeshifters and Native American origins, and it's very heavy on the circle and the spirals, and it's hard not to, it's hard to say, oh, it's just coincidence, especially in regards to the fact that there's 2 petroglyphs in 2 different locations showing what looks to be a device, not underground, not on the ground, but above ground transmitting. And we're talking, if these are very old petroglyphs. And, some people look at it and go, that's not what it shows. But you have to look at the big picture of the entire rock art, what's around it, where you're at, what other people have said they've seen or are investigating in the past or currently investigating. And I think it's a huge possibility. And, you're looking at what looks to be star charts around this device and maybe locations in the galaxy or somewhere that can be seen looking up out of this, from the sky on the Uintah Basin, no matter where you are, if it's McConkie Ranch, Dinosaur National Monument, or Nine Mile Canyon. The area is known to have great views of the sky and be uninterrupted in that sense. And what they saw, I think that the location has a lot to do with it.
No, absolutely. I asked specifically about the catastrophes, because that's a subject I've been interested in a while, and how it relates to past civilizations and our understanding of things like petroglyphs and ancient ruins that might be even more ancient than what we think. Are you familiar with a man named Randall Carlson?
No, I'm not.
Okay, he calls himself an amateur geologist and archaeologist, but his main claim to fame is catastrophism. And he has overwhelming evidence, in my opinion, that there were 2 catastrophes roughly 13,000 years ago and roughly 11,600 years ago, in the ballpark of those. And prior to 11,600 years ago, we had an advanced civilization on Earth, and it was very advanced. Maybe not necessarily in the high-tech computerized gadgets, but their understanding of things like astronomy, engineering, and all kinds of other, trades that we hold in high regard now. But in some ways, they were vastly superior to what we know. And his entire theory is based on the premise that there were 2 cataclysmic events in that time frame, between 13,000 roughly and 11,600. And everything after 11,600 was basically what we would know now as humanity, right? And this is where most of the recorded stories in human history start. And that's why it's significant in regards to Skinwalker Ranch, because I think that's also true of the Native Americans, of the biblical stories, of the great hero stories of the Greek and Roman mythology, places like Stonehenge and Göbekli Tepe and the Egyptian pyramids and things like that are probably way older than what we think they are. And they were more or less discovered by younger civilizations. And I wanted to kind of get your opinion on that theory, because I think it correlates pretty well with some of the things you have discovered and talk about.
Sure, and like you know, you had said and what we talked about, my major focus is on ancient anomalies pointing towards past worldwide catastrophic events. And that was why I was investigating. I wasn't investigating Skinwalker Ranch. I didn't even know a whole lot about it when this originally started. I was looking at petroglyphs and pictographs to locate anomalies that show catastrophic events taking place in the past. That's my specialty. That's why I'm in Mexico quite a bit, is in that regard, or overseas in Europe, is for this. I just happened to be looking at petroglyphs on the Uintah Basin, found some really interesting and strange things, not just in regards to the catastrophic events, but what got me hooked on, the Uintah Basin. And yeah, absolutely. You're talking about when I lecture, that's, my main topic. That's the main portion of my books. It's the fact that there have been major events that have taken place in the past. I'm able to go back 70,000 years and show that we've had civilizations that were able to leave the planet and had, had satellites out in the air, in space, and had craft that were better than ours. But as you said, a major catastrophic event took place and that technology was lost. And you got to think about it. Every time something like that happens, you're talking about 99% of the population being lost, less than 1% surviving. And in that 1%, how lucky could you be for them to be the scientists of the day, or the engineers of the NASA? It was probably just a normal, average individual that happened to survive. And there were obviously books and scrolls and tablets. And as these events continued to happen over, I've heard it even going back to 130,000 years ago to a prior interglacial period where it was even more advanced than what I've seen 70,000 years ago. You've lost all this data and all this historical data and technology. So as you said, as we continued down and we reached a past catastrophic event, which I believe happened about 12,800 years ago, it was a massive catastrophic event that took place at that point. And we lost a lot of that historical data and we didn't recover as well as we had prior to that. And then we got hit again. And I also believe that about 6,700 years ago, there was another major flood. And so you're talking about these locations around the world, like Göbekli Tepe or the pyramid, in Cholula, Mexico, or in Egypt. And I personally am under the belief that those are copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. And their original intent or what they were capable of was lost at some point. And the technology, people go, well, where's the proof? There would be proof. But in my lectures, that's not necessarily true. You think about a catastrophic event that alters the way the planet rotates for even a few hours. You're talking about 1,000 to 1,034 mile per hour winds for half a day. It would destroy absolutely everything, absolutely everything. Then you're talking about the land that we know it being covered by salt water, and you add, you know, saline liquid into that factor, and things that last thousands of years suddenly do not. And I give the best example I can. It's a Titanic currently underwater, under great amounts of pressure, under saline water, and by the year 2030, there is going to be nothing left of it for us to distinguish that that was the Titanic. And the only thing that we have left is oral tradition, is data that's been passed on. And what happens if you start a line of 20 people and you tell the person in the back a sentence, by the time it gets to the front, it's completely distorted. So now think about thousands of years having gone by until we're again capable of documenting this in a language form. What's it going to be by that point? Absolutely nothing that it started out to be. And the petroglyphs and the pictographs, what we see, you know, they could only survive for a certain amount of time when you're talking about these catastrophes. Everything else is probably underwater or been crushed under the tectonic plates and it's gone up and gone down, and new mountain ranges have been formed over what used to be there, and you've lost this. And, you know, you talk about things surviving in space. Well, they would for a longer period, but not forever. And, you know, it comes in contact with other things out there, and you lose these artifacts. And I think, the Native Americans, their historical data has been kept more intact than we as, coming from Western Europe or Eastern Europe, our history has. And a lot of what we had was destroyed recently, you know, by conquest, mostly fires that took place. You know, look at the library, you know, in Egypt, you know, look at what we lost there in one day.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And there are a few civilizations that seem to hold oral testimony in very high regard, and the Native Americans are one. But even though the Native American stories differ a little bit, you know, there are archetypes across so many of these. And like you said, you mentioned it when you said the flood story, everybody has a flood story. So even though that there is a cultural retelling of the flood story and the details change, to me, all that does is just solidify the notion that it's true, but not literal, right? So there was a flood, and that flood was major. Earth covering, and very few people survived at all. And the fact that they all tell the same story is just testimony to that event and how drastic that event must have been for the people who've experienced it and lived through it. And one of the major theories as far as the megalithic structures, in South America and the pyramids and Göbekli Tepe, and why they are the way they are and how and why they were built, is because the ancient civilization that created them was victim to what might have been a massive solar flare. And when a massive solar flare hits, it causes great damage upon the Earth and everyone in it. And like you said, it doesn't take much to alter things on Earth permanently and for a very long time. And I think they learned their lesson because their civilizations were wiped out by this solar flare. And the only way to really survive another solar flare would to have massive subterranean places to escape to, or these megalithic type structures like the pyramids or those that are in South America. And so I think it's interesting that there's so many of those, and that might be one of the major motivating factors, more so than just, worshiping a random pagan god. You know, it was a place to preserve knowledge, like a library, but one that could not be destroyed very easily.
Absolutely. Yeah, there, you know, in that regards, and in regards to, you had said a solar event, that's absolutely one of the catastrophic events that I believe was a cause of at least one of, you know, our losses of civilization, loss of culture, loss of technology. There were other things that took place, and when something of that nature happens, you're talking about events that take place that are a process, a natural process. Flood. What does a flood bring on? You got to think about the winds that are involved. You got to think about the change in the structure of the planet, of the way that the land is, and events of that nature. Absolutely in that regards.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting to notice the themes that keep popping up again. So that's one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you today, because of your knowledge of, the Native American stuff. I have a theory about this, and this is just my personal theory. But I think that, the Old Testament does a pretty good job of summarizing, in a very high level anyway, some of the major events. And it starts off with, the creation story. And the creation story mimics several other cultures' creation story. And then it goes into the flood narrative. And the narrative goes as such, where there is one guy who is usually considered to be pure of heart and intent, or someone chosen by God to continue on the civilization and carry knowledge forward. And almost through divine intervention, he's selected. And this person that's selected usually has a very critical role and is given the role of surviving the apocalypse. And usually this person builds something in order to do that. And in this case, it was an ark. And in other cases, it may have been megalithic structures. It could have been, anything and everything. But the archetype is, soon after that, a flood happens. And, you can get into the religious language and whether or not it's literal. I don't know that it's literal, but I do think it's true. And there are cultural retellings of that event. Across all of them. And it seems just like it all reverts back to a time pre-flood, in the Tower of Babel, right? So if you follow the Tower of Babel, you have these guys building this massive structure and they want to be like gods, and God gets upset, crashes the tower, confuses their language, and sends them everywhere. And I think that's why we have so many cultural retellings of essentially the same stories. If you believe the Tower of Babel story, where they basically just take their ideas and go other places with them and tell them differently. And that seems to be one plausible explanation as to why we're seeing the same things over and over and over again all over the world.
Yeah, it's possible. And it's interesting that you noted the beginning of Genesis, because and this is my belief. I mean, if you really read Genesis carefully, it's actually two catastrophic events that have taken place. You're talking about Adam and Eve being one around 12,000 plus years ago, and then Noah's flood 6,700 years ago. So we're talking about two catastrophic events that took place very close to each other.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, the Tower of Babel, and you see other stories in other cultures or civilizations that are very similar. And we hit upon this a bit that, in these events, over 99% of the population is gone. Just like the Bible said, it was Noah and his immediate family, and then, their portion of their wives or husbands and the children. And it's the same thing around the world. You'll see this. And a lot of people ask me, well, then aren't they just connected? And my answer is absolutely. I believe they're connected. Were we all together at one point? That's possible. Or is it the fact that there was something on this planet, like portals, that allowed for transportation or transit, some way, shape, or form that we're not yet aware of, to take place far more easily than what we have currently? And when you look at location and of where these stargates or portals are, and take into consideration that what you see above them probably wasn't what they were staring at thousands of years ago, because we're in a different location of the galaxy at this point. We happen to travel in what would, you'd say, be somewhat circular, So do these events happen on a time frame? Absolutely. And were some of our ancestors trying to tell us that? I believe the Mayan were, I believe the Olmec were, I believe the records show, you know, this cyclical data of loss taking place. And what's interesting on the Uintah Basin is when you think about the Utes, you know, they haven't lived there very long. You have these cultures that created petroglyphs and pictographs there that no longer exist, and we really don't know who they were. We just named them after the site locations we found and pulled some artifacts and said, you know, hey, we're gonna, you know, give it this name or that name or mark it as unknown because we don't even have enough artifacts to say who they were. We just know they had nothing to do with the Paiute, nothing to do with the Ute, nothing to do with the Navajo.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that fits in perfectly with, you know, the cataclysmic theories that I hold and that Randall Carlson has been the one to kind of explain them. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast like four or five different times talking about this. And I've listened to them all two or three times. So like 20 hours total. Admittedly, you know, I totally geeked out on this. But to me, it is the theory that kind of just explains everything as far as society goes. You know, there's so much unexplained, but you know, when you talk about Native American legends, when you talk about, you know, biblical legends and Greeks and Romans and all that, for me, every single one of those stories starts back to day one and the Genesis story, which is like you explained perfectly, it is post-cataclysmic event. So there was an earth and there was something going on before that day. And we don't know what, and that's the ultimate question. But I think that if we did know what, it would explain so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, we're obviously talking about the Uintah Basin, and you're talking about a Fremont culture and this Barrier Canyon culture. And who were they, you know? And obviously, they knew far more about the distant past than we do today. We don't even know who they are. And I've been pushing, you know, not just in my books or in my lectures, the fact that I think it's important that we, as quickly as possible, learn or try to be more open and receptive to alternative history or what the data is showing than what we've been told. You know, when I was at UCSB and I was in my anthropology and archaeology classes, you know, at first I believed exactly what I was being told. And then I had an epiphany when I was out in the field, you know, doing these studies or excavations, and I realized that it was just a bunch of crap being told to me. And current social scientists, they don't want to change their viewpoint. And it's unfortunate, but I mean, I understand, you know, that's how they get paid. And they say that, you know, people on the fringe, such as myself, are only looking more to advancing this with the public and not with the social science. And they're absolutely right, because I'm never going to get that opportunity to advance my belief system with the anthropologists and the archaeologists, because they refuse to believe anything than what they were taught by their professor, who was taught by his professor, the same crap over and over again. And I absolutely refuse to believe it. You know, there's portions of what I've been taught that's absolutely true, but, you know, science today, it's completely different than what science was yesterday. And in 100 years, they're going to probably laugh at what we believe in today. And I just want to advance that further in regards to the lost historical data that we have. And I think things happening on the Uintah Basin, whether they be far below ground or cloaked in some way, shape, or form that we don't yet understand, plays in, you know, into the same game. It's the same perspective when you look at it. And I think we finally gave it the right title, as you know, everything is paranormal. I hate using supernatural. I don't think it's religious in all aspects. And don't get me wrong, you know, I may be completely off that parts of religion may play a big part into, you know, daily life and even the paranormal. That, you know, paranormal is just something we are unable to currently explain. And we categorize it as such. And it's a big bag that we put a lot of things into in this day and age. And instead of continuing to put the same stuff in, hey, let's go figure some of this out and start changing the paradigm, think out of the box and change the paradigm as to how we see things.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's a good segue. And I know we're pressing up against time, but I wanted to ask you real quick. So you mentioned our understanding of technology and our understanding of history might be all wrong. And I agree with you 100% on that. So with that said, in regards to the UFOs and UAPs, do you think that this is a simple case of the U.S. government breaking the laws of physics as we know it and creating a super awesome high-tech craft out of thin air? Or do you think that there was some previous potential craft that was found and reverse engineered?
I think two things are taking place. Obviously, from what I've seen, it was there over 1,000 years ago. Something was there. I see what looks to be two craft in the petroglyphs. I do, or at least believe, that there is absolute potential for them having located something. And were they able to reverse engineer, or are they still trying to perfect that? That's a good possibility. But is something else in the air currently flying around that we're unaware of? Absolutely. I'm under the belief that I think it would be very difficult for anything to come from far, far away. I think it was already here. Whether you say it's interior in the earth, elsewhere that we don't know of, you know, hidden anomalous pockets, cavities in the earth, that's a good possibility. I mean, you know, it's a pretty thick planet. And I mean, look, we just found an interior ocean larger than the ocean that we see, you know, today on the outside of it. And is there a possibility for an interdimensional or something to that nature through a portal system, especially when you talk about what's been seen over, you know, the reservoir just north of the ranch, these portals opening right above the reservoir. I think the better option is interdimensional or interior to look for the answers. But, you know, whom am I to rule out any possibility? Absolutely. I mean, I think there's things elsewhere. I think there's things on planets that are close by and on the moon. I think it was created by us or people that were here before us or species that were here before us, but who knows where they came from?
No, absolutely. And, you know, as many questions as we have and as fun as it is to talk about it and research it, I don't suspect that any of us will truly ever know the answer in our lifetimes. I think we'll maybe get some little bits and pieces of the truth here and there, but I think we're still a long ways away from ever fully knowing. And that's under the assumption that it's even possible for us to fully know, because like you said, if it is something interdimensional or other, then it would probably be so far beyond our ability to understand it that it would basically seem like God coming down, you know, and landing a spaceship on the White House lawn. And I mean, I don't know that I ever want that to happen necessarily, because like I said, I mean, how do we understand that? And what does that mean? But I can't deny the evidence that that has happened already on Earth in a lot of different places.
Right. And just because we have something doesn't mean we can reverse engineer it. You know, like you said, well, we probably don't know what the hell we're looking at.
Yeah. You know, that would be so many, many, many generations beyond where we're currently at in regards to physics. It would seem as if it exists. Let's just say that it exists and the government has it, right? It would almost have to be something found or something given to us because of the gigantic leap in technology. The way it works typically is the government has something that's about a decade out from the civilian world. You know, and if they have something that can travel through air, space, water, and maybe even time, with the same minimal effort and produce its own energy and not be bound by the laws of physics, you would think that we would have many, many, many hundreds of others style of devices already benefiting our lives prior to the revealing of that. And for them to be able to hold all of that secret, I just don't know if that's possible.
Right. But we are mimicking what we can. And that's, I think that's the thing when you start looking at the aircraft that we currently have and their design, you know, is changing, or the hull of a ship has changed so much, or even the cellular phones that we hold in our hands and are in our pocket, or the chip that runs it. I think we're mimicking as best as we possibly can without being able to use the full technological ability of what we found or were given, like you said.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're pressing up against time here, and I'll let you go, but I wanted to give you the opportunity. I know you've written several books, and I think you have one in the works, so I want to give you a chance to talk about those a little bit, because I think anybody listening to the show would find those interesting and want to read that as well.
Sure. So I've written several fictional books, and I kept them fictional because of the positions I held in employment prior to writing them. I didn't think writing nonfiction in regards to paranormal that's happened to me or my catastrophic event theories on past civilizations would have gone so well when I was in law enforcement or as an investigator in the insurance business. So when you look at my Dark Shadows and Catastrophe or 10-22-2036, Dark Shadows and Catastrophe, a good half of that book is, I was calling it an autobiography. The main storyline behind catastrophic events and the nature of them being reciprocal is absolutely what I believe in. And the current book I'm working on is a nonfiction book based upon everything that I've been investigating and researching over the last several years. And a big portion of it is going to be based on the Uintah Basin, because just so many different paranormal events are taking place at one time. And that in and of itself is a huge anomaly for all that to happen in a single place. And it's very important. And to document, research, and hopefully experiment where others haven't, is a process I want to pass on to the readers. And hopefully, if anything gets solved, put it into the next book and maybe move on from there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to read all of that. Well, I want to thank you for joining me today and sharing your information. You're a wealth of knowledge, and I learned a lot of cool things that I got to research up on, like the 40th parallel line and the ancient Navajo myths and stuff. So I want to thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so you take care.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Skinwalker Radio. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe, and share with your friends. Help us grow the show to reach a broader audience. We're passionate about this subject, and we've got a lot to say. And if you want to learn more, you can join the Facebook group. Search for Skinwalker Space Radio and groups to find that today. We'd love to have you there. We share lots of cool information that you might find beneficial. Also, if you wouldn't mind, please consider being a donor to the show. We will have a paypal.me link available in all the show notes for you to click on and subscribe. You can donate as little as you want or as much as you want. So please consider being a donor today. Thank you.